Okay, so Taromes part 3, and this will just be part of the shiur today, despite the number of sources that are on the sheet. I really need to hand this off, just being sure everybody remembers. I think I included it in the email when I sent out to Komos, but we have shiur today, we have shiur, God willing, next Friday. And then we have shiur on Erev Yom Kippur from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. That last shiur, Bergman will at that point be wrapping up what he's doing now. And then if there's time still within that shiur, we'll also do something appropriate for Erev Yom Kippur. I mean, learning any Torah is appropriate for Erev Yom Kippur. Right, if you want to bring food and eat during the shiur because you're machzer for that, we don't want to keep anybody from practicing their kedushas. Okay, so we talked about what triggers taromes and the complaint against the inconveniences at various levels that were caused. We talked about the relationship between taromes and mechusar amana. Mechusar amana being acting in bad faith in some sense. We talked about whether that means that you're in violation of hin tzedek, your speech was not just. If you take the view that speaking sincerely and honestly, but then not acting in order to uphold one's words is a violation of hin tzedek, or whether it's actually a derabbanan idea, perhaps because of she'eris yisrael lo yasu avla, that we have it's a pasuk, but the concept is not to act in a way that is corrupt, the failure to fulfill one's word, whether there's no issur at all. We discussed as well, and then we started talking about what taromes actually looks like. And what we had said was that on the one hand, we have an apparent statement in Rashi that we saw at the end last time regarding the case in which the chassid wants to. The question of whether he takes back the coin that he provided that turned out to be inappropriate or not after the statute of limitations, Rashi made a comment that seemed to say that the taromes would actually be public. On the other hand, Hagos Mordechai said that we don't announce, we just tell him that his punishment is coming for retracting. If you retract, bad things happen. We had a side note also, the Tashbeis, who says it's taromes before Hashem. And the last bit that we did was the justification or reason for doing it in public, and we said that maybe it's latoelis, you have to warn the public away, so you can tell Lashon Hara for the sake of letting everybody know this person deals with people in bad faith. We had the idea as well that, well, there's nothing wrong with it because public shaming is asur under nasib amcha lo sa'or. You're not allowed to curse a leader, and that only applies to an osei masei amcha, someone who acts like you, but the mechusar amana is not acting like you. He doesn't act like a fine upstanding member of society. So he has no protection from what is essentially reprisal. And then the third possibility, what we're going to talk about now when we talk about financial fallout for taromes. But before we get to that, I wanted to show you the evidence that this was historically done publicly. People would get up in shul and complain about those they felt had done them wrong. There's actually a fascinating tshuva in the Or Zeruah, Beis Mem Hei, if anyone wants to look it up. It's a key source in Shiurim about Kriyas HaTorah. And what happens if shul misses a parsha or reads the wrong parsha? The Or Zeruah talks about a shul which missed a parsha for Kriyas HaTorah because somebody's complaint about somebody else went on so long that they actually didn't end up getting to lane. That Shabbos morning. Or Zeruah Beis Mem Hei. So that we had mentioned last time, the case in which it was done at Ashrei, but apparently this was done before Kriyas HaTorah. Go figure. On Shabbos, obviously, the tshuva of the Maharam Rotenberg on this is brought in the Beis Yosef, and I brought it for you. Why do I have the Knesset Gedolah? Oh, first, right. So first, I mentioned the Maharam in the Knesset Gedolah, in Source Aleph, where he says, Mishin o'omim b'diburu shu mechusar amana mutter l'krosa rasha. He says, you're allowed to call a person who is mechusar amana a rasha. You can call him wicked. And he mentions this tshuva of the Maharam, which is brought in the Beis Yosef, in Source Beis. Ani matzasi tshuvas Maharam atzmo v'kasu bo shenishla mishin ola lo ben v'nasno l'levi l'mol. Somebody had a son, and gave it to somebody to do the bris. However, hayakatan v'chalash, the kid wasn't ready. V'shalah v'yaben masayni niwolo. So v'amar l'sof chodesh sheyetzi mechlam nefel. So the father says, you know what? I want to wait. I want to wait for the first month to be done. Let him no longer be in nefel status, and then we can do the bris. Then, yeah, he said we should wait a little longer till he's healthier. The mole, in the meantime, leaves town. He has some need to get out of town. He doesn't think he's doing the bris anyway yet. And then the father says, you know, I think he's ready for the bris. The mole's still out of town. The father says, well, I don't want to wait to do the bris milah. You have to do it soon. So therefore, he got another mole. The question is, the first mole hears about it, comes back to town. Which mole is going to do the bris? That's the problem. Veheshiv. And you got an answer from the Maharam, the second paragraph. The case of Rabbeinu Tam was after the bris happened. The Moel had assigned somebody to do the bris. Somebody else came and did the bris first. What exactly that means, I don't know. But now there's a fight. Hey, wait a minute. You have to pay me. Pay me back. The question comes to Rabbeinu Tam, and he says, Milsa the He says, Basin doesn't have the authority to do this sort of thing. This would be like a knas over and above. This isn't a matter of restitution of funds. Where the Moel had money and somebody took it away from him, it's, I didn't get money that I wanted to get. He also didn't do the job. So he says, we don't have the authority to handle that sort of thing. And even if the Moel grabs property from the other Moel for payment for this, we would actually remove it from him. He had no right to do that. But on the other hand, in a case like ours, in a case where the Mila hasn't happened yet, and they're both there, so the person you committed to first is the one who does it. That's the answer, the person who did it first. And then he continues, Umiyui Hadar Bay, if the father walks away from the Mila, not from the Mila, walks away from the commitment, and he says, I'm not gonna go to you. So the Rivam says, Basin can't stop him, but he's violating Sheris Yisrael Yasu Avla and Mutter Likroso Russia. You are allowed to call him a Russia. What's the basis for calling him a Russia? So the Maaseh Rokeach says, you learn it from Ani Mahapich Bacharara. In source Gimel, the halacha of where you have a pauper who is struggling to get something, and somebody else wants to get it as well, and somebody else grabs it first, and the other one is already making the endeavor, so that person is Nikra Rasha, he's called a Rasha. So the Maaseh Rokeach maybe says maybe it's because you're violating Divrei Chazal. Sorry, sure. Yeah, so there's a lot of discussion about the law of Ani Mahapich Bacharara. I intentionally elided a lot of that issue in terms of what type of item it is. Is it an item that's available elsewhere, not available elsewhere? Is this an actual Ani, or is it someone for whom this is particularly useful? That's a big, big discussion beyond the scope of what we're going to do today, or Rabbi Bergman will never get to give his shiur. Not this week, not next week. So we want to preserve that. So the Maaseh Rokeach's point, though, is really the end of it, where he says, Behu b'chlal ha'overal divrei chazal. That's a very sweeping definition of Russia, right? Anybody who violates Divrei Chazal is now a Russia. Rosh Hashanah is coming. That's one approach. Another approach is to say if Hain Tzedek is really a thing, then he's violating a D'oraisa. If you take that school of thought, the Raiva, though, brought in the Shittim Kabetzes in Bamitzia Memtes, disagrees. He says in Dalet Be'efshar Dafilu Mitzvah Sasei Nami is Behu. It could be you can make the argument it's a Mitzvah Sasei, and therefore Abaye says. Regarding Shalei Dabar Achas Belev, sorry, the Avalim Amar Bedaz Gemur Mishum Chusar Mana Ika Russia Lo Mikri. That's really the point that I wanted to bring from that. Right, but he says no, he's not qualified as a Russia for that purpose. There's a tshuva, the Chaval Nachalaso. I always like the Chaval Nachalaso because his tshuvas are posted online in easily cut and pasted material. So he has a case of a man who was selling a car, and a fellow calls him up about the car, and he discusses it with him, and the guy sets up a time to come visit. He doesn't tell this fellow that somebody else had actually called first and will be looking at the car first. So the question is there any sort of mechusar amana / taromas? The guy goes out of his way to go there and look at the car. So the Chaval Nachalaso says that in the course of discussing this, he doesn't address the Russia point that we were just discussing now. He addresses the question of how this is done. And he says there's actually a formal structure for how you do this kind of complaint. And he quotes you that goes Mamanios and Chovalu Mazik. If you take a look at source Tay, The Rambam writes that if you you pick up your hand to hit somebody else, even if you don't hit him, he's a Rasha. That makes the person a Rasha, right? Like the famous thing, Vayomar LaRasha, Lama Sekariyacha. He hadn't actually hit him yet, according to one read of Lama Sekeh. But if you take a look at Agos Mamadios on that, in Source Vav, Pasak Ravan, Shaposkin Dino Kain. Shaposkin Dino Kain Lekroso Rasha. He says, yes, we call this person a Rasha. Upasula Edus, which is a whole other discussion we're not going to get into. Is someone Pasula Edus because he acted in bad faith? Generally, I think we assume not. But he says, "V'shekinegdo nishba v'notel, etc." V'chim pasak re'em. We're going to go on mabek b'charara. Jump to the end of the second line. Sheyesh l'chazan hakneses l'hakris ala v'beis hakneses b'rabim v'chein hayamora v'shalom mori rabbeinu meir mishma. He says, you actually make the declaration in shul in public, and that's that Maharam mints in Sur Zion, which I mentioned at the end of the first shiur on this Tyromis topic, where he says, v'chein sarach shil tzibur l'hakris hakneses b'shar sha'omrim ashrei. And there's a formal text that he announces at the time of Ashrei. It's Gumfin, Gumchen, and Gumfrecht. Yes, I said the names. So the big question here is: okay, we now have a public announcement. We have a machlokes. Can you call him a Rasha or not among the Rishonim? Is there any financial obligation? Bottom line: say you walked away. You're mechusar amana. You caused enough tircha for the other fellow that now it's you're vulnerable to taromes. So what's the financial payout here? Is there one? So the Tiferes Yisrael says, nah, source chess, taromes. On our Mishnah from the beginning of the parak. Midalokam are yeshlin taromes zealzeh, talking about where the employer and the employees, right, tricked each other, whoever was doing the tricking, as we discussed. Didn't say they have taromos on each other, which sounds like an active level of claim. So by saying, all you have is taromos, that means there's nothing more. You complain. Okay, they announce it in shul. Right, fine. Someone else next week will come along and do something worse. That's it. A few lessons hidei shemayim. You don't even need to make sure you go into Rosh Hashanah with this settled. Hashem is okay with it. Yeah, Jeff.
So every case of Taromas, make the other person, you can call him a Rasha, or a certain levels of Taromas?
So it sounds like, first of all, it's rooted really in the Mechusar Amana. So even when there's no Taromas, you'd be able to do it. And it sounds like, no, any level of Mechusar Amana behavior, according to the view that says this person is actually labeled a Rasha. I, in general, would advise people to paskin against that view, and not to go calling people Rishayim. I just think that it's bad practice.
What about that case? I forget what you call it, but you know when you go shopping and they have no intention of going anything?
Right. Oh, no, as Devarim?
No, what you had a...
Yeah,
he was not
shopping. When you go in, but...
Yeah, no, that's right, that's Onah. So it's funny, I was thinking about the Onah issue in this. It seems to me that you should be vulnerable to a claim of Onah as Devarim here. For speech that causes people pain. You know, this is speech that causes people pain. I don't think I've seen it written up that way, but I was wondering about it also, that should be a legitimate charge here. But again, no financial ramification to such a thing. The problem is that... It's not a subset of Taromas, it's a subset of Mechusar Amana. Mechusar Amana is very broad.
Oh, I see. So
you could so deal in bad faith without causing someone enough tircha to warrant Taromas. That's why I understand it.
And yeah. It's only the Mechusar Amana where there's a possibility of being a Rasha, not other types of Taromas.
What other type of Taromas would there be? Taromas is subsumed.
Isn't all of Mechusar Amana. I mean,
right, so that was the question that we asked last week. Could there be a case in which you were fully honest and are vulnerable to Taromas?
Some of the cases we looked at.
You just caused the person to tear.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, that's true. The donkey died. If you can make, well, then, no, because we only applied that in the case of the weak donkey. You sold off the stuff on the boat. Is that Mechusar Amana or just Taromas? Right, so, yeah, you could make the argument for Taromas without it.
Yeah.
The problem that I have with the Tiferes Yisrael is everything he said. Right. What do you mean? You don't have to let Tzitzit Dei Shemayim? That's a shocking thing. Even with Grumma, right, where we say, I am not responsible if my actions indirectly cause somebody to lose money, let Tzitzit Dei Shemayim, I am absolutely obligated to pay him. That's broader than us came on the Shulchan Aruch. Like, so where does the Tiferes Yisrael come out saying that there's nothing here? And indeed, it seems there is an obligation to make things right. The Prisha says it. In source test, Thomas Mia Yesh Lamakabel regarding the Baal Hasada, the Sarah Litan of Kanchak Bechitin, that I'm not going into his particular case, but the part I underlined. The Iboy Leos Nakimi Hataromes, Sarah Labaiso. If you want to get out of Taromes, you better make him happy. We understand what making him happy means. It doesn't mean you give him a pat on the head and say better luck next time. So, not only that, but it may be argued that a kinyan has in fact taken place via the verbal agreement. Even though we keep saying dvarim, dvarim, dvarim mean nothing, right? And you remember the Gemara above Mitzia Memchet that said there's no kinyan with words. And I brought for you the Rambam and Hilchos Mechira and Source Yud. Hamekach eino nikna v'dvarim, bafilu he'idu aleim edim. There ain't no transaction if it's all verbal. V'chein benosei matanu mekavlo. The same thing regarding gifts. This goes back to the line, as Jerry said, a verbal agreement ain't worth the paper it's written on. So why should there be any form of kinyan? Thank you. So if you take a look at Source Yid Aleph, Tosfos, Ve'ein Lismoa, Heichem Mishtabe B'Shtar Zeh. He's talking about the sugya there, which is the Tnoim sugya, the Shtar Psikta, where the two sides, right? Yeah, they memorialize whatever it is that they've been discussing. And he said, don't be shocked. How could a person be bound via Shtar Psikta? Ha'ein Metalpa Niknin B'Shtar. You're talking about movable items that they've agreed to pay each other, whatever. Shtar doesn't do anything. It's just words that are written down. The answer is you went to the trouble of writing a shtar. You are mishaved yourself. Even just by speaking, things can be nicknamed. There can be a kinyan. In fact, the Gemara of Mitzia, we talked about it last week. He said, if you pledge to give somebody a small gift, even though it didn't get to the other guy yet, doesn't matter, you just pledged it to Gamaru Makna. There is indeed an agreement that creates some form of kinyan. However, you can still back out. Rav Elchanan Wasserman discusses this in the Kovetz Shiurim, which I brought you in Yud Beis. He quotes the Tosfos that we just read. And he says, the end of the first line in Yud Beis, he says, it seems the Makire Kahuna, this is talking about the case which we saw last week as well, right? About the Levi. The Levi who, the Yisrael says to the Levi that I have Meiser for you. And the Levi says, great, I am separating my Trumas Meiser from the Meiser that he's holding for me. Leave aside Mukaf discussions, that's not relevant for us. It seems then that the Makire Kehuna, when there's a relationship between this person and the Kohen, the Levi, he's planning on giving the stuff to, they don't acquire it until it actually comes to them. And so said the Ksos. Ava B'yemes, E'ef Shalafarish Kein. Da B'malva Moses HaKohen, B'mavur D'makire Kehuna, Yachol Limkor Chalko. V'yineh Medulazach, Ashtava Liyado, Eich Yimkor Davar Shener Shalom. He points out that in the discussion about a person who lends money to the Kohen, Gitin Lamadam Adubes, which is a parallel sugya to the Bava Mitzia one about separating Trumas Meiser from the Meiser that's been pledged to the Levi, the rule seems to be that the intended recipient, the declared recipient, is in fact able to do things financially with what has been promised to him. Not only that, v'chein b'sugyon mavur, in the Gemara Bava Basra, it's clear, demorish as banav. He passes it to his kids. Discussion there about the son where it was promised. Tell me, if the fellow never received it, right? Because it was just a verbal commitment, how did he pass it on to his kids? He says, if you swear you're going to give something to somebody, you're not allowed to back out, you took an oath. So therefore, the recipient actually passes the right to his kids. How in the world does such an inheritance pass? And he quotes to the Tosis in Ksuvos, who says that maybe there is such a thing as speech that's going to create some sort of a kinyan. And he the Truma's mind. I said, Vitzarech Lomar, I'm jumping to the last paragraph here. I'm rushing a little bit, but I hope it's still clear. Vitzarech Lomar, Kamoshim Matzinu, Kinyan Aremas Yochel Achzer Bo, Behutavka Bekinyan Sudur, Veatam, Kaven Shalom, Hotzi Adayan Adabar Merishuso, Kimuhu Rabbanan Shekhavanaso, Haisa Sheachol Lachzer. He's dealing with a Kinyan Sudur case, right? You pick up the scarf, you pick up the turban, and there they say that since you haven't actually had the item change hands, you're able to back out because the understanding all along was that you're able to back out. And so too in the Makirei Kehuna. Technically speaking, you could get away with not giving the Meister to the other guy. That's true. You are not. It's only a verbal commitment right now. Mikomakom daito lahaknosa rak bitna yim lo yachzer bo ad shiavo liyad hakohen v'im lo chazer bo kana hakohen le mafreya. He says what actually happens with a verbal agreement is that the kinyan starts now, but it is conditional on the follow through, and in the event that the follow-through doesn't happen, then the whole thing is off, because you had in mind the entire time, and the parties understood, and we're going to talk about this more in a second, but or a few seconds, because if Sammy wants to say something. But the idea is that the parties take as a given that you could still walk away. It is not an ironclad thing. However, it starts now, not later on. That's the idea that Rav Hanan is putting forth here. We're going to give examples in a moment, but Rav Sammy.
Just, I imagine this is what you meant also, but just to be clear, I think he's only talking about particular cases, meaning Makiri Kahuna is a specific case where you always give this guy your chuma, and then it's almost understood that you're going to give it to him. I don't know if this applies to every single...
Right, so Rav Hanan, Rav Hanan thinks it does.
In the case of the
It applies way beyond. The Makiri Kahuna case happens to be the Gemara's case.
What about the case of the Levi? There, you don't always give it to the same Levi, and it still works, no?
Well, and that's the question.
The
Makiri Kahuna Levia.
But it's,
he applies it further. It's not... what I think you may mean in your clarification is that some level of commitment is required in order to reach this point. So, for example, the Stripe Sikta case in Ksuba, that Tosos is talking about, the fact that you went to the step of writing up a shtar matters. It isn't just any time you say something, in the same way that we distinguish between matana muetes and matana meruba, right? The small gift, that's considered enough to make everybody comfortable this is going to go forward.
Right.
But that's really minimal. That's much less than a Makirei Kahuna case. It's even less than a Tznaim case. All you did was say to him, I'm planning on giving you this small thing. So the answer is it's far more expansive than the Makirei Kahuna case.
Right.
How does he get out?
So I don't want to get into the Kinyan Sudur case there, because I didn't want to open up the whole sugya too far. I'm going to hold off on that. If you wanted to, we can discuss it later. I have to stay a little bit because I'm picking up my son from the airport and his flight's delayed. But so if you want, we can discuss it later. But I walked a fine line in preparing this shiur in wanting to not eat up the entire hour. There's a lot to talk about beyond this. I have a whole piece on memorandums of understanding and where they fall out in this. Is that considered to be enough of a commitment or not? And yeah, there's a lot more that we should be saying about this. But just to give you examples to this. The Rashba does this in Gittin. This I saw in an article, Be'inyan Mechusar Amana B'Dvarim, by Rabbi Leo Tzion Sofer, in the journal Mekab Tziel. He notes our Gemara in Gittin, which we did reference here, about the Levi making the Meiser, the Trumas Meiser. We saw it in Bav Mitzia, right? And he notes that the Rashba in Gittin says this. If you take a look at Zoros Yigimel, Ve'im Tomar, you might challenge, how is it that the Levi is able to take Trumas Meiser from Meiser he hasn't received? Im Kein, Avhu, Hech Yaseh Trumas Meiser, Dekati Lo. Hello, it's not yours yet. Ikala Mamer, the cave on the Ain Lo Boli Yisrael Hanosin Elatovas Hano, Vahavila Matanamuet, this is the Yisrael has no rights to this stuff. Except Hovas Hana, right? The satisfaction of giving it to this lady instead of that lady, whatever he's going to get for that, that's tiny. So he's really giving his Tovas Hana to this lady. Well, that's a matana muetas. V'yesh b'chazaras, mishum mechusari amana. And therefore, it'll be mechusar amana for him to walk away. That's good enough to enable the Levi to make it trumas meiser and so on, even though the balabais is able to back out. So he says, no kinyan has taken place, but it is sort of like a kinyan has taken place. And so the Derech Emunah of Chaim Kanievsky in Source Tesvav, Right. He's dealing with a separate case. He also deals with this case, but he's dealing here with a separate case. He's dealing with the following. The rule is that a worker in a field is allowed to eat from the produce and not separate true and miser. It's not koveya for miser. However, if his employer gives him stuff that's separate from what he could eat as a worker, it's really viewed more like a benefit, then he has to separate true and miser from that. So the Derech Emunah says the following: Mashik shebechazanish, the Rabbeinu pasak that lokeach lishloach lachavero ein koveya lemaiser. He said that in the event that he takes produce while he's working in order to send it to somebody else, now you have to separate true and miser. That's not part of just eating while you work. The Rambam says no, ein koveya lemaiser. That wasn't true. It's not. That does not mean that true and miser need to be separated. V'gabei ben havalei matana. But if he says, I'm going to work here and I'd like you to give to my son, that does count as a matana. V'lama koveya kan, why does that require separation of true and miser? V'nira da'afa gav de'lo kana lefidiv Rabbeinu b'yachol lachzer bo. Granted that, the Rambam will say that he could back out, the owner of the field can back out of giving it to the son. Mikomakom kokama de'lo hader bei bevadei chaya bala bayis litein liv. No, as long as he has not formally recanted, he does have to give it to the kid. Shari eskimu b'nei makach, because that was their agreement. Havalei mekach. That is called a mekach. Gabe Hasheni, Dale Inyan mekach b'maisos eintach mekach mama she'enu yochol achzebo she'ikar atam shekoveya mishum shedavar shekana v'shulam avuro margish kvius v'achilaso. He says the whole idea that a mekach is obligated in truma and meiser is because it feels kavua by dint of the agreement that you have. That's the way it works. Having nothing to do with our discussion, but that's the way truma and meiser obligations work. And he says, the Rambam's view is that if you're not supposed to back out, even if you are technically able to back out, but backing out would come with mechusar amana, mishapara, whatever, the Rambam believes we view that as a mekach, and therefore it is koveya for truma and meiser, and therefore regarding the son, the obligation would be to separate Truman Meiser. I bring it not in order to confuse everybody about being Koveya things for Truman Meiser, but rather to show this language of it's a Mekach because you're not supposed to back out because you've reached that that stage. Which leads to a comment from Rabbi Zalal Zolti in the Mishnah's Yavetz, which I didn't have in a cut and pasteable form. However, I had it quoted in an article where I could do it in cut and pasteable form. Talking about the issue of Yerusha, and not Yerusha, which we already talked about, where one inherits what their parent was supposed to receive from somebody, but what about the other way around? Reuven says to Shimon that he's going to give him something, and then Reuven passes away. Are Reuven's heirs obligated to give it to Shimon? Or can they say, well, there was no kinyan, there's no obligation for us? So, Bekiva Eger in Source Yud Zion says no. Where someone promises somebody else a matana mu'etes, and then he passes away, his heirs are not obligated to pay off that commitment. And then look at Rizolti in Source Yud Ches, this is the article I mentioned a moment ago, quotes Rizolti. It was say for Mishnah's Yaveitz, Lagon, etc. Kasab de Lesvaras Atosvos, Ksuvas Kufbeis, which we saw. Imkein, Hadde Choser Bo, Humuchusar Amana, Eno Rak Mishum de Eno Mekayem Dvarav. El Mishum Shayede Zesha Choser Bo, Makia Zhusakin, Sheshaver, Matana Muetis. Once you have this Tosvos, who says that a kinyan of some sort has taken place via your verbal commitment, that means that backing away isn't only about Hain Sedek, it isn't only about Sheris Yisrael Yasu Avla. You are nullifying a commitment that you made. Therefore, the heirs do have an obligation to follow through. And if they back out, even though they never said the words, you can't make a Hain Sedek argument for them. Nonetheless, they are destroying an existing kinyan. He says, on the other hand, you have a the Chacham Tzvi, and you have a Bekiva Eger. But I think you can resolve it. Maybe the Isser against breaking that level of Kinyan is only on the person who created it. He's saying, you're right. Mm-hmm. That's what he's really saying. Vayosha Yorshim lo tichu kiyum hakinyan, mistabar lo mershin lam chiyuv lahamido, zchusam lachzor behem ulevatlo. Since the Yorshim didn't create it, therefore they are indeed able to back out. Right? You follow what he's saying here. The idea is that yes, it's true that a kinyan has happened. Yes, you are right. The Yorshim are still able to back out. How do I solve that? Because the issue of backing out on a kinyan really only applies to the person who made the kinyan. That's the argument. I don't know what he would say about the whole Goslin issue, where we say if the father is a thief, the kids are obligated to return it and keep it up the aim. I don't know where that fits into all of this. And yeah, I didn't look at the Chacham Tzvi, so I don't know. Maybe he addresses this. But within the idea that a kinyan has happened, Rav Yonah ben Chanoch Navon and his Nechva Bekesef suggests that in fact there may be a financial element to Hachrasa, and he floats the following idea with which I'll conclude this section, which is that he suggests that if you back out. Backing out is not binding until your backing out is announced. In other words, hachraza has a financial component as well. So I pledged that I was going to give something to Jerry. Okay? I told Jerry I was going to give him matana muetes. Then I said to him, you know what? I'm not going to do it. But he didn't yell in shul yet about it. The chazan has not made the announcement yet. As long as the chazan hasn't made the announcement yet, I can still go through with it and I'm not called mechusar amana. Once the chazan announces it, now it's off. You'll tell me, so what's the nafkamina for that? He has a nafkamina. What if you do kiddushin with a retroactively promised dinar? Right? In other words, I told Jerry I was going to give him a dinar. Jerry went to Mekadesh a woman with that dinar. I backed out.
What physical object is being given?
So you don't necessarily need to have a physical object for the Kiddushin, right? We talk about it as a Mechilas Halva and so forth. You don't need it. So Jerry promised her my coin, and I backed out. Is the Kiddushin still valid or not? What if I backed out, and then I backed out on my backing out before the Hachraza? You follow? So that's enough of a Kesa's argument. He argues that, in fact, the retraction is not final until you receive this Hachraza, or according to that guy's Mordechai warning, whatever it is. That's what makes this. He actually has enough Kamina for an Ish issue. Well, thanks. Remarkable. Okay, so I was asked to talk about briefly the traitari issue. Are we still? You still asking me to talk about that?
No, whatever you prefer.
All right. We'll talk about it briefly. The traitari issue is this: the question of are you allowed to back out if circumstances change after you made the verbal commitment? We have sources that support the idea that you can back out of a sale after money has changed hands. I'm sorry. Yeah, after money has changed hands because the price changes. In other words, forget verbal for a moment. Dealing with a financial commitment. I'm not going to go through it inside, but you see the Gemara there in Source Yates, but Metziah in Dalet Amid Beis. Case is this. A man made a payment for goods, which then became cheaper. And he wants to walk away from his payment. So Rav Papa says, based on the language of the Mishnah, Nayin Beis Amid Beis, Posik Imo Kishar Gavoa, he says, depends on what your deal is. If the deal you made was for the best price, you said to him, I want the best price, then you can say to him, I want to go with the current rate, because the current rate is more favorable to me. Otherwise, you're locked into the earlier price. To which the Rabbanan say, wait a minute, it's only money that changed hands. That doesn't lock in a price. So Rav Papa says, you're right. I meant he gets a Mishapara if he doesn't accept the earlier price. The Mishapara on him. So Ravina then says, but maybe the Mishnah's requirement that you say best price is only according to Rabbi Shimon who says most. Konos? And then he says, no, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that most are not kone if the price changes. So even though you paid cash, if you haven't taken delivery of the purchase, if you haven't taken delivery of the purchase, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that you can back out, and it's just Mishapara. And he says it has to be Mishapara, because otherwise Rabbi Shimon doesn't have a case of Mishapara without that. The case in which you gave money, this is the key takeaway. If you gave money and then the price changes, you are able to walk away and all you get hit with is a Mishapara. That's Bav Mitzia and Dalet Amid Beis in Source Yud Tes. Kiddushin Ches in Source Chav has the following story. Rav Huna Bar Avin's sons buy an Amma, a maidservant, for Priti, coins. They don't have any coins. They give a collateral piece of silver instead. Then the market rate appreciates. And the seller says, I want to back out. I'm not interested in going through with the sale of the Amma. And Rav Ami approves. He says, you're allowed to do that because only collateral has changed hands. So the Baal Amor says, in these cases, Baal Amor is in Chaf Aleph, he says, in these cases where money has changed hands or collateral has been given, you are still able to back out and the only penalty is Mishapara. Well, then in a verbal agreement where the only penalty is Mechusar Amana, right, and Taromes, if it's a Taromes case, then in that case you can back out altogether. If the price changed, the financial environment changed, now you're able to walk away. Now, even within the view that it's Hin Tzedek, right? Hin Tzedek, and so it's a Sederais of some kind, even still, he's going to be okay with it. And then the Baal Mor asks, but wait a minute, go back to the case we saw originally with the flax sale, right? Where Rav says to Rav Kahana, you're allowed to back out from the flax sale when the price changed, but Rabbi Yochanan says no. Right? Remember that story? We think Rabbi Yochanan says no. Remember how the Gemara presented it. The Gemara presented a story first. Rav says to Rav Kahana, you're allowed to back out from the sale of flax when the price changes. And then we walk into the whole discussion of, are your words binding on you? Is it Mechusar Amana or not? And we find out that Rav is really lenient and Rabbi Yochanan is not. So that sounds like Rabbi Yochanan, who we paskin like, would not agree that you're able to walk away, even though the price changed. To which he answers, no, everybody agreed you could walk away from the verbal agreement where the price changes. When they brought that story, it was just samoch to the inyan, but it wasn't actually part of the debate between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Even Rabbi Yochanan would agree, you are able to back out. What's the logic to allow backing out, according to the Baal Amor? Three different views. So the Ran, which I brought you in Source Chav Beis, says, Nishtan Hashar Harezu Kamatana Maruba Velo Sam Chadeito. Just like we say, Matana Maruba, that if you back out, if you promise a very large gift, you're able to walk away from it, because it's Matana Maruba, that's different. So too a verbal agreement when the price changes. That's something you're able to walk away from. It's like Matana Maruba, you didn't expect that level of a hit. That's the Ran. The Prisha says a second explanation. The Prisha is in Source Chaf Gimel, and what he says is the issue of Mechusar Amana is really Echad Bepeh Ve'Echad Belev. When you speak, you have to speak honestly. He spoke honestly. The terms, the environment changed. He thought that he was buying something for $100 that was worth $100. Now he's paying $100, saying it's worth $80. That wasn't what I meant. I didn't speak dishonestly. That's the Prisha, the Taz, the Aruch HaShulchan. They give that explanation. Your commitment was genuine. And that is a Sefer Kovetz HaYashir VaHatov, which I have to admit I'm not familiar with. Rabbi Yosef Fleischman, who I mentioned last week, quotes it in Source Chav Dalet, who has this very interesting idea. He said that it's because Hein Tzedek and Sheiris Yisrael, those principles, are not meant for cases that trigger a loss. Not if you have to suffer for it. That just seems to be incorrect. And Rav Fleischman points this out as well. It's not just me. Number one, it won't fit the Baal Amor, because the Baal Amor said that it's actually, the whole thing is Maos Konos. It's not about honesty at all. It's about the fact that the Maos Konos in the case of the payment, he views this as analogous. Your words actually forming some kind of opinion. It's not about honesty and saying, well, you didn't expect a hefset or whatever. It also wouldn't fit the view that this is a del risa, right? If it's a del risa, I don't care about your hefset. Right? Hefset is a nice thing to bring up when you're dealing with derabanans. It doesn't carry any weight with del raisa. It's a hard argument to make. You're better off arguing about Tana Maruba or that you were honest at the time. Do we agree with the Baal Hamor La Halacha? So the Rush quotes the Baal Hamor, apparently agreeing with it, as does the Tur, which I brought you in Source Chav Hey. Ditto the Ritva in Kiddushin, ditto the Ran, we mentioned. The Sma actually uses this in Shin Lama Gimel to explain why the Tur says you're allowed to back out from hiring an employee. He says he must be talking about where the circumstances have changed, and that's why he's justified in doing so. However, the Ramban and the Mohamos there in the Gemara, as well as the Rashba, reject it. Ditto the Magid Mishnah, and the Shulchan Aruch leaves it out, so that the Sma, which I brought you in Source Chavav, says that, yeah, the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch disagree. They do not follow this this heter at all. The Aruch HaShulchan, which I brought you in Source Chavches, I'm sorry, the Ramah, first of all, the Ramah in Source Chav Zayin sides with those who are strict. He brings both views, but then he says v'chein nira ikar on the view that says you should not back out even if the circumstances change. The Aruch HaShulchan brings both sides of it, and then he concludes v'nira de medina v'aday in b'zeh mishum mechusari amana rak v'midas chasidus. He thinks that in fact you are not obligated, you are able to back out. It's midas chasidus not to back out. I realize that I really raced through this. I hope that it was somewhat clear, even if not all of the cases were clear. But the upshot of this is that, number one, it's a real world announcement, Taromes. It's not just like you're unhappy with the guy, whether it's a warning, Agos Mordechai, or something done in shul. It really seems like it's something done in shul in public. There may be financial ramifications, despite the Tiferes Yisrael, some kind of an obligation to make the person happy, possibly traced to the fact that your kinyan is somewhat binding, even if it's back outable, which is a word. And last, if circumstances change, the Baal HaMor suggests that you would be able to back out, and some do bring it. The Shulchan Aruch seems not to like it. The Ramah seems not to like it. The Aruch HaShulchan, though, seems to say you could do it, and it's just midas chasidus not to do so. Sure.